I'm a mythical Pandora,
sent here to judge the universe.
Do you have any idea what the weapon is?
It could very well be a planet killer.
I would really like to go on this mission, Admiral.
Imagine having the power to annihilate entire worlds, and even the stars themselves.
Humanity is worth saving. What have you done?
Pandora. New episodes premiere October 4th. Free next day, only on the CW app.
I'm a mythical Pandora.
Sent here to judge the universe.
Do you have any idea what the weapon is?
It could very well be a planet killer.
I would really like to go on this mission, Admiral.
Imagine having the power to annihilate entire worlds, and even the stars themselves.
Humanity is worth saving. What have you done?
Pandora. New episodes premiere October 4th. Free next day, only on the CW app.
New episodes of Pandora premiere every Sunday at 8 p.m. on the CW in the U.S., and you can watch it anytime on the CW app. Season 1 is now streaming for free on Amazon Prime. Welcome back to Unboxing Pandora, the podcast where we take a behind-the-scenes look into the hit CW show Pandora. My name is Peter Holmstrom. I'll be your host today. I'm also the writer's assistant on the show as we do a podcast commentary for episode 4 of season 2. With me here today, I have two very special guests. First up, he is the showrunner, executive producer, and story writer for this episode, Mark A. Altman. Mark, thanks for being here.
Hey, welcome to what is the name of this again? Beyond Here Lies Nothing. Beyond Here Lies Nothing. Because, of course, they're all named after Bob Dylan songs, and I'm just trying to remember. Yeah, it's not exactly Blowing in the Wind. Let me see. Beyond Here Lies Nothing. That's right. Cool.
We'll get it eventually. Yeah, thanks for being here. We also have here joining us today, she's the director of this episode, is also a acclaimed screenwriter, actress, director, has a comic book coming out soon, and a podcaster herself, Bria Grant. Bria, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Can I just say about Bria that it was so fun working with her, and it was unbelievable. She has so much going on. I thought I had a lot going on, but every time, like, we were doing, it's like, oh, she mentioned, sorry, it's like, oh, I'm doing a comic book for them. Oh, I'm doing this. Oh, I'm writing the novel for them. And then it was like, oh, I got to wrap on time today and get back to my apartment because I'm doing a Q&A at Fantasia. And it's like, oh, okay. And then tomorrow I got to finish, on time and get back because I'm doing a Q&A for another film festival, but they're showing a different film of mine. So unbelievable how much she has going on and was juggling the whole time that she was in Sofia making the show. But we had a great time. I mean, you know, I talked a lot about, you know, having an opportunity to work more closely with Brett on 201 and 202. And it was the same thing with Bria in that I had only come back to Sofia for the end of 111. So I hadn't really, you know, had a chance to be in the trenches there. And it was just such a pleasure because not only did Bria direct 204, but she also directed 205, the next episode next week. And just terrific. I mean, she's an awesome director and she's so great with the actors and, you know, also just really fun on set. So we were very lucky to have her.
I had the greatest time. It's such a fun show to do. And it was so fun having you there. I really loved it because it just made it streamlined everything. And I feel like we were on the same page about everything. And that made me feel so good. So I had the greatest time. And yeah, that's a wild story that we literally shot all night and then went and like, we wrapped and we were like, we got to go. I got to make my Q&A. So I did my Q&A at like 6 a.m. Sofia time.
And it's so funny.
In Canada.
Because when you wrap a long night shoot, this is for 205, so we won't go into the details, but you wrap a long night shoot, there's an adrenaline that's going. You think you're going to want to go right to sleep, but instead you're so energized. And so we all ran back to the van to get back, you know, like a Keystone Cops, you know, cartoon. And then everyone was there except for Max. And we're like, where the hell is Max? We got to go. Bria has to do this Q&A for Fantasia. And like Max was just off gallivanting, you know, with the camera crew drinking. It was like, Max, get in the van. He's like, well, I mean, I just finished this long night shoot. It's like, we got to go. She's going to run out of time. She's not going to get there in time. And it was funny. And then, like, you know, we're just cruising down the highway. It's like, go faster, go fast.
It really was. And then I made it on time. I got to do the Q&A. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, because we're a low budget show. It's not like we all have different cars. We all go in we all get picked up in the same van. You know, right. So they all pour in. It's kind of like a clown car. You know, I'm the last one to get out, and it's like, oh, thank God I'm home. I'm exhausted.
And since she probably won't plug it, I'll plug it for her. The new movie that just came out, 12-Hour Shift, that she wrote and directed, has been doing great on the festival circuit. And so pick that up now. All right, guys. So we want to get to it. We are, again, audience members, we are doing episode 4 of season 2. We always call them 204, and it's just the way we label it. But episode 4 of season 2. And again, for our listeners, we are watching a ad-free version of the show. So if you are watching it on the CW app, first of all, thanks for watching. But you'll need to pause the podcast whenever the ads do pop up. Or you can purchase it through Amazon or iTunes and watch it ad-free that way. Or just listen to it in your car. That works too. All right, guys. So we'll do a 3-2-1 countdown. And when I say play, we will all hit play on our respective videos. All right, and 3, 2, 1, and play. Here we are in the lab.
Yeah, so there's some of my amazing second year work. Uh-huh. Now, this is interesting. You want to talk about this, Bria, about the lab and what went into doing this? Because obviously, there was a lot of post on this.
There was, and this is sometimes used as the common room in other episodes where that people are meeting up and having coffee and drinks and stuff. I never used it as that, so I don't really know what it looks like in that version. But yeah, what we did here is we got rid of the window and replaced everything with green screen, and bless all of our VFX people. They tolerated all of this green screen we put up because we have it here and we have it kind of over on the side as well. And then we just turned this entirely into a lab, which was super fun to get to play with, and I think really ended up working really well because we wanted the lab to look futuristic and look cool, and that common room has such a cool look about it. Like, the walls are so interesting that I think it worked really, really well.
Yeah, we had all these grand plans for the set, but nobody really, we moved a lot of action because it turned out, even though it looked very futuristic, it was a little small, so you couldn't do a scene with a lot of characters, but it really works well in this episode with the green screen and the enhancements, and then obviously when we see the DNA in just a minute, and obviously the way Max lit this was really nice as well. So it works quite well for this scene. But I know that it was a struggle for some of the other directors, particularly because the window, sort of designed for a translight, but we couldn't afford a translight. So instead it's like a printed curtain. So the skyline didn't look too good. So a couple of scenes got moved into the lounge. Last year it was the Black Hole Lounge. This year it's the Officer's Lounge. And but I really like this set, the way Bria shot it. And, of course, we're coming off the tragic death of Mata in the previous episode. And, there was a time where shows like this wouldn't deal with the implications of it because everything was so standalone. Mm-hmm. But obviously the death of Mata plays a very big part of the show throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I think what's really nice about the lighting that Max did is that it is kind of calm and a little... it's darker and like it has this like darker feel to it. So not only does it feel like kind of like scientific and cool, but it also like shows the mood that they're in when we're starting the episode. And then you get these two who are just wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Well, I one of the things I really liked about what we're doing is like futuristic shows tend to only show sort of futuristic architecture. You know, everything has to be the Jetsons. And, what I liked about our show was that it's like real life in that you could go to Harvard and you'd see a building that's 100 years old and next to it was a building that was built 10 minutes ago. And I like the fact that, you know, the school had modern parts and it had old parts. And, you know, part of that was that it born out of necessity. But, you know, when I realized second season is we didn't have enough new stuff, like sort of super modern stuff. That was when we built this set, because I didn't want to keep leaning on our locations, which are sort of throwbacks. And then, of course, here's this beautiful Harlan Freed. There's a practical location that we shot in the city, which is this tall skyscraper in an unfinished part of the office building, and we got a lot of use out of it. It really was suggested by our line producer, because we were talking about actually building a set on our stages for Harlan Freed. But when we saw this, we're like, no, this is going to be it. This is great.
Yeah, I love this location. Someone, I can't remember who said this to me, but they called this area of Sofia, they called it Dubai, Bulgaria, because there's all of these buildings that look really modern and cool. This is such a rad.
Yeah. And, it's funny because if you actually look out that window, there's like a Toyota dealership outside and some really sort of rundown buildings. And then to the left, there's like a bunch of futuristic buildings. So, you know, obviously we have our VFX people sort of paint that out and enhance it. But yeah, it's not a very exciting view out that window.
And I love that you got.
Go ahead.
Oh, I love that you got Harlan Freed back for this season. I think he's so good and such a fun actor. So fun to watch.
Well, we love Luke, and if we're lucky enough to have a third season, then I want to do a lot more with him next season.
He's fantastic.
He's earned his place on the ensemble. You know, he's such a fan of the show. He loves coming to play with us, and he's just great. So I'm really hoping to have him, you know, play kind of a bigger role next season.
And just for those at home, his eyes are not enhanced. Those are his eyes. His eyes are that blue. It is wild. Like, because it looks like they look like they've been enhanced or something. And so he actually like has that blue of eyes.
Wow.
I know, like in Blade Runner where they where the guy makes the eyes. It's like he it's like he got these clone eyes or something, but they're really his eyes.
Yeah. So. Yeah. He's and so then, good though.
This is an episode written by one of our new writers, Susan Jansen, who did a fantastic job with this episode. And Susan was has a lot of experience in comedy, actually. She was one of the showrunners on, I don't know if it was Boy Meets World. I know she was on Home Improvement for a while. So she's
Lizzie McGuire is what you're looking for.
Oh, Lizzie McGuire. Okay. And thank you. And
yes, Susan, I'm a fan.
Susan's terrific. And she was super helpful, great in the writer's room. She jumped right in. I don't know that much of a sci-fi person, but I thought she really brought, you know, helped us with the deepening of the characters. She brought a lot to this, and I really thought she did a great job. She was a real good person to have in the writer's room.
Mm-hmm. And this was so nice to have this giant screen here so we could really play with this like big moment that she's having. So I loved having this big green screen, but of course, like on the day, she's just looking at a green screen. So it's just a testament to Priscilla's acting right there.
But those numbers are accurate. We had the science advisor tell us what numbers should be up there, so they weren't just some generic numbers. You know, this was a lot of science advisor gobbledygook, which we try to avoid for the most part, but when you're dealing with DNA, you kind of need to lean into the science of it all.
Yeah, and she was so helpful to me. I reached out to her multiple times asking her random questions about science, which is not my expertise, and she was so good.
We're really lucky because I'm not a big fan of technobabble, but I also don't want it to not be accurate. So like having her, you know, she's young and she's hip and she always has great ideas. And, you know, JD's just another great, and even when we were doing the writer's room, she also like came through Zoom because she's in Australia and, you know, she talked to all the writers and had a lot of advice and she was great. Now this is Shral's office, which is actually the conference room at our studio. And I think we've talked about this. We needed an office for Shral because we couldn't go on location for this like we have in the past. And we just built this really we dressed this really fantastic office for him. And we just all liked it so much. We kept, you know, moving scenes there because it felt really authentic to who he is. Mm-hmm. You know, this sort of it's a big mess. But,
yeah, you know. and it has that gorgeous map back there, which is so lovely to shoot against. Like it just everything looks so nice. So nice. Well,
Peter had designed the map at the beginning of the season. And I have to say, this is one of the few times a production designer was like, I can't make this office work work. I don't know what to do. It's like, it's a shitty, and he was at the time was, and I started coming up with all these ideas. I said, well, let's get this map and let's blow it up and put it on the wall of the galaxy. And I said, let's get the flags and put them on flagpoles. And, you know, let's go like a lot of professors I've had where they're like total mess and just have a total mess. And he started to see it. And then he just, you know, totally exceeded my expectations with what he came up with.
Yeah. I love that. I love that space. I love this space too. I love it's gorgeous. So gorgeous. Like the lighting is so gorgeous. Max did an amazing job. And obviously that's green screen as well. And I mean, these two just come in and I mean, they're very easy to light. They're very beautiful people, but also they just did an amazing job with this scene. I think it's so pretty and really sets up how eerie the whole episode is going to be.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what I liked. I always referred to this episode as our Heart of Darkness episode because it was our first real, like, you know, Star Trek, and I don't mean the TV show, but like where we're actually like on a mission, like exploring a mysterious part of the galaxy, and we're sort of going downriver. And so, like in the script and in the notes to VFX, it was always like it needs to be weird, it needs to be mysterious, it needs to be strange, and it, you shot it that way. So like, there's always like something a little off about everything as they travel through space.
Yeah, and it's fun because I mean the actors really got to play the energy at like a different level. Like everything could be weirder and kind of tired and slow, and that was really fun to get to play with through the whole episode.
But the problem was my. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say the problem with that sometimes is you play things lethargic and it slows down the episode. But I think that in this case, you know, it didn't, you know, like you told the way you had everybody play it, it was kind of mysterious and dreamy, but it wasn't like dull.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Well, that was the goal. I'm glad it worked. I was going to say, this is my first time working with these two, and it was so much fun. They're so lovely. They're so dedicated. I really liked working with them.
The thing I say about them is, first of all, Nicole is just one of the nicest people. Super bubbly, super sweet, super excited to be there. She's really just a lovely person and energetic. And you know, this is one of her earliest roles. And the thing I keep forgetting about Shay is that, who plays Jet, is because he's so outgoing on the show, I expect him to be like that in real life, and he's very introverted. You know, he's not very, you know, you really have to sit down to pull things out of him to get him to you know, to be, you know, because he's so talented and he's such a nice guy, but he's not like extroverted at all, which is I always, you know, even I fall for that. Like, you expect the actors to be like the characters. It's so weird.
Yeah, that I same. It happens to me all the time where I'm like, oh, they're not, this isn't who they are at all. This scene is gorgeous, and I love it. We shot this at sunset, and we were losing light the whole time, but it ended up working really well with what we did. Like, I mean, shooting it at sunset actually made it so much more gorgeous.
Well, and you wanted to use this lens, which was such a great call, using the Lens Baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which we got. I mean, we wanted to make it weird, and from the very beginning, I was looking at all these different references for possible dream sequences and like what you could do to make it weird. And I found this Lens Baby, and Max really liked the idea of it and ended up working. I think it looks so cool, but yeah, for people who don't know, you actually like manipulate the lens, all of those little ins and outs moments, where it goes in and out of focus. You do that hand with your hand, you actually manipulate it with your fingers. So it's tough to do because, you know, you're holding the camera and then you also have to manipulate it with your hand, if you're handheld, which we were. But it was really fun to get to play with. It's just, it's hard to figure out, you know, it took us a few times to go, oh, okay, this is going to look cool. We had to kind of figure out how it would look.
I shot the sunflowers. That was my big contribution.
Yes.
I did the drone stuff of the sunflowers. So this actress who plays Xander's mother, she was a local hire, and I had done a big sort of cattle call early in the, season for a bunch of local actors. They all read for the role of, I think it was Jennifer in the second episode, but, you know, not for a specific role. And then I could just sort of suss it out. So when we came and read, I immediately knew she'd be great for the mom. And I said, oh, do you do a British accent? And she did like a spot on British accent. I was like, oh, okay, she's going to be perfect for Xander's mom. And she was great. Now this,
Mark, you have to talk about this location. You have to talk about the location.
Why do you tell it? It sounds too self-serving if I tell this story.
Well, because we knew we needed this we needed an outdoor location for Raylan's scene, and then we needed this palace coming up in the other episode, and we needed a bunch of like beautiful gardens, and we could not find this location. Like we looked at a couple different places, we looked at stuff online, we looked at this hotel, and we're all just standing around trying to figure it out. And then Mark is like, you know, there's this palace. There's a palace or something, right? There's a palace. And everyone was like, the Bulgarian team was like, I don't know. And like no one knew what he's talking about. And he kept being like, I'm pretty sure I Googled this ahead of time. I was looking at locations, there's this palace. And finally they were like, oh, the palace. And it's just like just a place called like it's like the king's palace or something. I can't even remember. And we went to it, and it's like the most gorgeous place in the world. And if Mark hadn't been there, I don't know where we would have shot this, because no one remembered that it was there.
It's ridiculous. I mean, like we're standing there with the location manager, and it's like, well, we don't. Do you have any botanical gardens or anything like that? No. Do you have like anything where he could be like digging? No, and we're standing literally at a hotel, in the back of a hotel. Like this was going to be our place. It was ridiculous, mm-hmm. like these Chinese gardens. And I'm like, you know, I seem to remember like going online and looking at places cool in Bulgaria. And it was like this palace, and they had like botanical gardens or something. And it's like, no, you are mistaken.
Didn't know.
and that's where we ended up going. By the way, the stuff on the TV was outtakes of them sort of dicking around on set. There were two cameras when we were shooting this, and they would, at the end of the take, they would just like look in the camera and make faces, and then we ended up putting it, burning it into the TV, and it's so
great. Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love that. That was awesome. And that's such a fun room y'all made that I got to shoot in. It was a really fun location as well.
Well, it was still set up from 203, which mm-hmm. was, and then I thought you know, it's interesting because a couple of directors have shot in that room, and every one of you has shot it completely differently, which is great. And I, you know, I love, because that was a crazy night. That was your last day of shooting on, and you shot in there, and it was nuts because you had to shoot that. And then we were picking up stuff from like three other episodes at the same time, you know,
that's right.
So we had to get stuff for Chris's episode of the guy in the chair, which was 203. We had to get this Dreamy Jacks from when Xander's dying at the beginning of 202. And then we also had to get like this window POV from the Kubrick for 201. So it's like you were shooting stuff for like every episode.
That's right. But we did it. We pulled it off. We worked it out.
We did.
It was a lot. It was a long day, but we got through it.
It was like being on Game of Thrones, where you're like shooting a bunch of episodes and get credit for one. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I just say I love shooting the bridge. It's such a wonderful location to shoot on, and it's just so fun to light. Everything's so lovely and beautiful there. I loved shooting that location.
Everyone loves the bridge. I mean, we finally built like a really great set. Everything on the Dauntless is great. The bedrooms, but the bridge is really special. And you know, every director has their way of shooting it, and it's just terrific. So and here's just, this guy is a gift, Vikash Bahai, who plays Shral, just a gift. He's so great, and I think this was really an episode where you got to see, you know, just truly what a fine actor he is.
Yeah, he had so much to do. It was such a heavy episode for him, and he came in just swinging, ready to go, and I feel like he can give you so many levels in a scene. I felt like we got to play quite a bit with what he did, and we had a really, really good time. I mean, a good time for being tortured, you know, for whatever that means. But he just really was gung-ho about it, because he had a lot to do, and there were a lot of days. There was one day, the day where he's like running through the ship, I think we did, I didn't even want to talk about how many setups we did that day, and he was on the whole time. Like, he literally gave it his all every single take, and I just think he was such a blessing to have on this episode.
Yeah, he's such a pro. He's such a pro. And you know, there's a danger. Every science fiction show has done this episode, you know, oh, their dreams are coming true, or they're having these nightmare dreams. You know, it's one of the worst episodes ever of Next Generation, this thing called Night Terrors. You know, I'm sure if I thought about it, I could tell you like every science fiction show that's done this. But I feel like in ours, it really informs character. And mm-hmm. of course, this B story with Raylan, I just absolutely love. I mean, I knew very early on that we're going to do this because we wanted to deal with the ramifications of Mata's death. But Ben is just so great. I mean,
he's fantastic.
This is when he sort of owns the season starting from here on out.
I think he did an amazing job. And I love what y'all wrote here because I feel like it's just a wonderful take on the way people deal with grief. And it's just like an interesting way to put that into like a science fiction.
Yeah, it was something I knew we wanted to do this. This was very early when I was thinking about season two, you know, and the idea we were going to kill Mata in the third episode, that she was going to sacrifice herself. And, you know, it was sort of, I've talked about this a little, you know, and you know, why didn't the original actress come back? And, you know, part of that was because she wanted to come back for the whole season. And I'm like, well, you can't because we kill you in episode three. And we knew that very early. It's like, oh, but you know, I guess the agents wanted 13 episode guarantee. Yeah, but we kill her in episode three. So because this to me was such an important story, the whole idea of processing grief and dealing with, you know, this death, and particularly he has so many unfinished issues with her because of course for a long time, you know, this relationship meant nothing to him. And it's only recently that they've sort of discovered how much they mean to each other. So it's really particularly tragic. And I know at one point we were going to have it, and this was probably a bridge too far, have it that Mata was pregnant when she was killed. But the network wouldn't let us do it. And I was kind of upset about that for a little while. But then I realized, like, okay, maybe that is a little too much.
But I think Tegan did an amazing job stepping in. I mean, I got to work with her on this one and the next one. Yeah, just this one, I guess. And she did an amazing job stepping into a role. I mean, that's such a tough thing for an actor. And I think she just did an amazing job. And we were on the same flight out, actually, when we left. And I think she had not gone to sleep that night. She had stayed up all night and hung out with everyone because she was so sad to leave.
I know. I felt bad because here's another actress. You know, I don't know how much she's worked, but she came and she fell in with everyone super quickly. Everyone loved her. She's such a great, she became sort of their party planner in terms of planning hikes and doing all this stuff. And she just loved, you know, she just, everyone loved her. She was great. Right. And then, you know, you had to say goodbye and it was hard. I mean, I remember, you know, when we finished shooting the scene in the hotel room, you know, and we were saying, you know, bye bye, Miss American Pie. And it was like, it was really sad because we all really liked her. And it's, you know, it's hard when you kill off a character, particularly, but she wasn't just a guest star. I mean, she'd done, you know, four episodes and, you know, almost half the season. And it was like, oh, yeah, we're going to keep playing, but you're out of here. It's rough.
Yeah. And speaking of actors who are nothing like that, I mean, I'm sure you've talked about this, but Oliver is obviously one who's, I mean, very different than his character on screen. And I always forget it until I watch the episodes. And then I'm like, oh, he's so serious on screen and off screen. He's can be such a goofball. But he's real nice energy to have.
Oliver is as great a person as you can hope to ask for because he's a total dream off screen, funny, charismatic, you know, just delightful and kind of a little bit of, but when he's on screen, he just takes the work so seriously, but the second you call cut, he's back to being a goofball. But you know what he brings to this part, it's amazing, and he's so terrific. He brings that authority and, you know, and leadership that you want to follow him, and, you know, competence, but also, you know, there's not that what I guess people now consider that toxic masculinity where he's like too strong and too in command and not, you know, willing to consider other people's, you know, he plays the part so perfect, you know, and you want to follow him. And, you know, I think he's just great.
Totally agree. And I love the way Ben plays this right here too. So nice.
Oh, it's so good. There's like a melancholy to it. He's brilliant. He's just brilliant.
Yeah, Ben, as we've talked about also, he takes this role very seriously. He's very attached to Raylan. He's very protective of it in the way Leonard Nimoy was protective of Spock. And I have so much respect for Ben. And again, we got very lucky because we didn't have a lot of time to cast the show last season and first season. And we ended up with a really, really terrific cast. Yeah. Now here you have
a dream. We used the lens baby a lot on this one, which was really, really fun. But there's only one hallway. So this is the same hallway over and over, kind of shot in different directions. And I think it ended up working pretty well that we were able to shoot that.
Yeah, I was reluctant to say that, but yes, we have one hallway with a green screen. And
maybe I should reveal this.
Too many secrets. It's a little frustrating to have the one hallway, although we can make it look like a lot of different hallways, especially because of that green screen. But, you know, obviously if we get a second season, because this was another set that we actually put the wall in to make it look like it was another hallway.
Right. Yeah.
You know, a lot of tricks of the trade, but next season, you know, my hope if there's another season would be to build out a lot more rooms on the Dauntless and a lot more hallways. I think we would clear out a lot of stuff. And really, now that we realize how great the Dauntless is, we would do a lot more with the Dauntless.
Oh, I love her magician outfit. We haven't talked about this, but I love Jax's the magician character. That's like such a fun outfit to get to put her in.
Well, I mean, it's funny because we told the costume designer, yeah, we want it to be like Xantana. And and of course, you tell the Bulgarians, like Xantana, like, what are you talking about? I have no idea what, you know.
They think it's the band.
Exactly. A household word. Yes, she came out looking like Xantana. Exactly.
But I think it ended up being so fun. I really liked getting to put her in that. And she had a really good time. Priscilla had a good time getting to play that character and playing her so silly and fun. That was really fun for us. And again, he's so good here, I think.
Yeah, totally.
And this was just a hard day of him running around the whole ship and being confused and stuff. And he just played it super well.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mark,
go ahead,
Mark. I wanted to ask you a bit about the character of Jet, because this is kind of his first episode in his redemption arc, like essentially. Him. Which is
This is the beginning, this is definitely the beginning of his redemption arc, because that's something that we knew was, you know, I've said this in interviews. I said right now when we're living in this cancel culture, where like you do one thing and then people don't want to hear from you again, you know. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to kind of look at Jet and see, is this a character that can be redeemed? And why did he do the things that he did? And I think that, you know, we start to see another side of Jet. And it's interesting to look at a character that maybe, you know, certainly at a 106, you think, what a loathsome guy. He got what he deserved. What a jerk. And then start to see, peel back the layers and realize, this guy's a little different than we thought. And maybe he does deserve a second chance. We'll out, right? But that to me was something very interesting to explore, and I think that as the season goes on, we do more of that. And this is certainly, I mean, we did it a little bit in 202, where you find out that he's not robbing Schrall's, the stealing the test, that he's a janitor at the school. But this is the big,
definitely the big moment.
Realize that you know, he has this horrible loss, and he's sharing it with Raylan to help Raylan with his pain.
Yeah.
And it's something Shay and I talked about a lot, that like there was possible, you know, in Jet's background that he actually spent a lot of time in the VR space and like almost got caught in there as well. And that's just like such a sad story, and has also had to deal with grief himself. And I just think it's such a beautiful story, and I love the way y'all wrote that.
Thank you. Nice. Rudy Giuliani got caught in there too, but it was only but I really love that story, and that's why I hesitate to even call it a B story. I almost feel it's like two A stories in a sense. And but I think that it's just you know, for anyone who's lost somebody meaningful to them, I mean, hopefully it will resonate. And I think I know, you know, people were saying after Mata died, I really put this, they're not just going to let this go by. And I think it would have been a mistake of us to not, you know, deal with Mata's death in a meaningful way.
Yeah. And I love it, because I think it is, people can get caught up in their grief, you know, and that's just, it's a very human thing to do. And seeing both Jet and Raylan go through that is really great. sad, but great.
Absolutely. And now here, you know, we're back to the science fiction part of the show, which is, of course, you know, finding this planet of the lost race that we were told about in 203. And, you know, I think Xander comes off as very clever, you know, in the way that he puzzles it all out. Mm-hmm. It's funny because it's like one of the only episodes where we actually have a full crew.
Mm.
But, you know, in 3, they steal the ship and there's nobody aboard. And, you know, it's just like this is like the, oh, we got the people at the helm and we have all these ND crewmen and crew people. And it's.
Yeah. The front of the ship is green screen, but all those other parts are not. They're actually screens, which is super fun when you're shooting because you get to kind of see all of it play. You know, because a lot of times you're just looking at green screen, which you're trying to pretend, but like it's cool that like all the, like the whole thing that he's standing on is actually lit up and the screens they're all looking at are all actually lit up. It's not, that's not
green screen. You did a really great, it's no secret I'm a geek for a lot of this stuff. You really did a great job shooting the view screen. Because originally when the production designer designed the bridge, one of the things I changed was he had it in 3 different sections where like the, you know, 3 different views. And I said, no, I want a giant main viewer. And it was like, and he was like, really? I'm like, yeah. And I drew it out and I said, this is what it's going to be. And, you know, a lot of the directors, some of the directors haven't shot it. Like they shoot it so small, you don't get the impact. And like you shot it so well in terms of seeing the whole view screen, which I love because that's why we have a giant view screen. You know, I don't want like something the size of the TV in my living room. I want a giant, you know, view screen. And I love that. And one of my favorite shots is the one where you actually shoot from outside the ship inside, you know, at the end, and you see part of the ship, and then you see them standing by the view screen, which, you know, I guess you could consider a window. And it's just such a beautiful shot. I mean, really, it's very clever.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I love that giant screen because you get to, especially for this, where you're really entering a whole new space and a whole new world, you need to be able to see that full space. Like that it's so nice to have that giant screen to get to play with. I'm glad you didn't do it in 3. That would have been awful.
Oh, I know. It was so weird. It was more like a submarine, and I wanted it to feel more like a futuristic starship. I mean, obviously, the production guy did an amazing job, but there's certain things you just, you know, that's part of the process. I'll just never, I think, be happy with the interior of the Kubrick. But you know, we tried to just, we couldn't rebuild the entire ship, so. You know, we sort of added on and added some detailing and everything. So it's a little better this season, but, you know, still it's like the Dauntless is gorgeous. And, you know, the Kubrick is what it is.
I like the Kubrick. I mean, and especially because you can kind of put it wherever because it's all 100% on green screen. So you get to kind of, I love seeing it. You know, you're shooting it. And I think you did a really good job because you were there the day we were shooting it and telling them like how much to move, how much to move around, how bumpy is it, like that kind of thing.
Oh, that's so funny. I totally forgot about that. That was where I gave the Frank speech. I remember it was their first time where they had to do ship shake. And I explained to them how, you know, Frakes, John Frakes would do it next year. He always tells this story when we're on Librarians. He told me this great story about Next Gen, about how he would say 1 to 10, you know, and a 1 was like a slight tremor and a 10 was like you're being thrown across the bridge and it's almost like conducting an orchestra. So I said, you know, Bray is going to say this is a 3 or this is a 6 and gave him the whole Frake speech. In fact, I was going to try and get John on the phone to like actually give the speech to them. But it was like it would have been the middle of the night in America. So I couldn't. Had I put more thought into it, maybe I would have asked him to record the speech and played it for them, because clearly he would have done it a lot better than I did. But it was so great to be able to give them the John. And John Kim was there, who also heard Frakes give the ship shake speech. So he said that I did justice.
Well, I will use the speech from now on because it was so helpful for me to be able to explain it like that. Cause it's hard to get everyone on the same page and that just to be able to go, okay, it's a 1, it's a 3. And like being able to yell these things out, like it just helped, you know, immensely getting everyone to do the same thing at the same time. Cause they're all actually physically shaking themselves, obviously.
It's funny with the aliens. This is all makeup effects enhanced a little by color. We wanted to do more with them through VFX, and it's just after 203 and all the work in 204, Crafty couldn't really do much more with them. But now that I'm looking at them, I think color's done a nice job. And then they remind me a little bit of the mutants in Beneath the Planet of the Apes. So they actually look sort of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like them. And they were all very nice women. Came in, we're in makeup forever.
Yeah, it's funny. Go ahead.
We shot this just right in front of the studio, which worked out pretty well.
We had originally talked about dubbing them with men's voices to make it a little weirder, but then the temp, we had female voices, and it was actually pretty nice. We left it that way rather than dubbing them with men.
Early on in the writer's room, they were always referred to as the pig face people, which was a Star Trek reference. And so I only can see them as having pig faces. That's all I can see.
Yeah, we kind of steered away from that in the pig face.
That's fair. That's fair. That's totally fair. But
yeah, when we're working with the makeup people, what this would be. And this little girl was just a real sweetheart. In fact, we had two kids on this, her and then also the girl who played Jet's sister. And I really wanted to make sure that both them and their mom felt comfortable because I know it could be really stressful. So I brought them a bunch of swag from San Diego Comic-Con, you know, oh, here's a Pandora hat and a shirt and, you know, and just really made them wanted them to feel at ease because, you know, it could be really nerve wracking to be a, you know, young kid on set and, you know, with all these people and especially if you haven't acted a lot. And, you know, also, I mean, very early in my career, I worked with, what was her name? I can't believe it. I can't remember her name. The one who was, somebody became a very big famous actor. So it's always good to be nice to the kids, but no, I really just wanted them to feel at ease and comfortable. And they were very pretty. And we got a lovely, lovely note from one of their moms just thanking us for how well they were treated. And I'm really glad that that was the case.
Yeah, at some point, this little girl realized that you could ask for ice cream at any time, and they would bring it to you. And she was there 3 different days. So once she realized that, which I think was day 2, she was like, "This is a good place for me to be."
Nice.
She was enjoying that.
If you're the actor, you can do that. If you're the executive producer, showrunner, apparently you can't do that. Apparently if you're the DP or the director, apparently nobody does anything for any of us. But if you're the actor, then they run to get
run as fast as they can. Yeah.
That was a big speech I gave at the beginning of the season where I had to say, look, it's all fine that you know I'm looking out for the actors, and that's important because they work very hard. But I said, you know who works really hard? The DP and the camera team and the directors. And I said, I want to make sure that they get equally well treated to the actors because they're working as hard, if not harder. And I'm not sure that ever landed.
Yeah. It's hard.
Max is still waiting for his ice cream.
Max never got brought ice cream.
I love this because
sets up the next episode, which is nice.
Yeah.
And you really shot the hologram well. Sometimes people don't shoot holograms right. And this is just perfect. It's like, you know, full body, and it's like a full conversation, and it's really perfect.
Yeah, we actually shot him in the space. We shot him there, and just had him not look at them. But I believe we went back and forth on that. That's one of those like VFX things that we talked about in about a million different ways, but it ended up working really well. Looking really cool.
Yeah, it did. And this is just gorgeous. I mean, Crafty Apes has been hitting it out of the park the whole season. I'm so happy with the visual effect. And then look at this. This is at warp.
That's the full screen.
Now this is the shot I'm talking about. This is stunning. You know, Bria's the only one who shot it like that, where she's outside. Really, she's out with the green screen outside the window, and you see the front of the ship and then through the viewer. Just such a beautiful shot.
Yeah,
it worked really well. Crafty Apes had to build some of it because the ship isn't totally built out, but they had to build a little bit, I think. But yeah, it looks so pretty. I'm so happy with the way it ended up.
And then the score, this was actually the temp, but it was Joe and Panka's temp that we love so much that we just kept in the, we said basically, let's keep this. It's so effective in terms of capturing their mood. And now at the mix, we have a nickname for them. We call them Techno Joe and Pop Panka.
Love it.
I don't know how that came about.
Just to also speak to like this shell, because it plays, she wears it for a bit after this, but this is one of those things that I think people who don't work behind the scenes would like never know, but we looked at so many shells for that shell. Like Mark and I looked through 30 shells to decide on that one shell, which I think we ended up with the best one, but you know, it's one of those things that no one realizes how much time you put into that kind of small.
And the string.
Detail. Oh, the string. I know the string. We looked through 30 different strings too.
Yeah. Now you're bringing back memories. Oh my God. We looked at more freaking shells.
We looked at so many shells. And then people were bringing shells from home. There was just so many shells to look through. But it played such an important role and it's going to be there for a minute. So we had to make sure we got the right one.
And this, to me, is so nice, too, because here, you know, they really had a tough time after 202. They're not really talking. 203, they had to work together, but it's a little tense. Even through this episode, things are a little tense. And then, you know, they end up together because, like, they're just both feeling very alone. And it feels very realistic to me where that, you know, they hook back up again. But, you know, it's different than it was earlier. It feels like they're hooking up out of loneliness and not necessarily out of love at this point. Of course, this is something we sort of changed from the script. We sort of hid the reveal, like, wow, this really happened to him, that he gave up this information, you know, that went under torture about Pandora. You know, we had revealed this much earlier, and then in the cut, we sort of changed it to hide the ball more. So it's more of a revelation that he, you know, he gave, you know, under torture, which anyone would realistically.
Yeah, and I love his acting in that moment. It's just real. Real star power in that moment. He just really captured it in a gorgeous way. I think I saw it all.
Blues
on his face.
Here. Oh, it's just so nice. The lighting here. Just this may be the best looking episode of the season.
Mm. Ooh, thank you. Yeah, Max did an amazing job. I think it really.
Yeah, Max did great. Yeah. And Max directs later this season, and he did a wonderful job.
Mm. I'm very excited to see what he did. I'm stoked.
And here's a preview of next season.
next
week.
You get a little Johnny Ken. You get Rayon, you get Chernoff, you get Dino Kelly, you get all sorts of cool people in this one. I had a real good time with that.
Oh God, there's so many great stories about that episode. And there's Elizabeth Hamerton, who plays a new character in our show, Princess Aleka, and she is wonderful. And I think 5 is just a really special episode. So hopefully you all check it out next
week. Yes, please do.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Listeners, thank you so much for being here. Mark Altman, Bria Grant, thanks for joining us on Unboxing Pandora to talk about this. To the listeners, if you want to connect with us on social media, you can find us at Pandora Writers or at Series Pandora on Twitter and Instagram, as well as on Facebook. Guys, you have any final words on this episode?
No, I just want to thank Bria for directing an amazing episode and being such a joy to have on set. And I know the actors and everyone in the crew just loves working with her. And I hope we get to do it again soon.
I love it. I have so much fun. Thank you for having me. It's such a good time, such a good show to work on.
It's fantastic. All right, guys. Until next time, we'll say goodbye. And hope you join us again on Unboxing Pandora.